For KXRW, I'm Stina Trecha, and I'm here to tell you a little bit about what is happening this June. Portland Book Week is happening right now. 10 days celebrating the independent bookstores that make the region worth reading in. From June 5th through June 14th, more than 75 local indie bookshops across Portland, Vancouver, and Southwest Washington are throwing open their doors for one of the most genuinely community-rooted literary events in the Pacific Northwest. This is the third year for the Portland Book Week, presented by the Cascade Booksellers Association, and every year it keeps getting bigger. Here's how it works. You grab a Portland Book Week bingo card at any participating shop. I grabbed mine down at the Fort Vancouver Library in downtown Vancouver. It's a bingo card. You collect stamps as you visit stores, and they say things like a bookstore that sells used books, a bookstore that features children's books, a BIPOC-owned bookstore, a bookstore recommended to you by a friend, a bookstore outside of Portland proper. We know where that is. That's up here in Southwest Washington. You fill out the card because everyone's going to give you a stamp, and you submit it because then once you get bingo on this card, you're in the running for prizes, bookstore gift cards, signed books, literary event tickets, and merchandise. But the card is really just an excuse to do what book people already want to do. Browse, discover, linger, find new bookstores. There are gold star events scattered throughout the week. Author talks and readings, a Jane Austen-themed tea party, book trivia nights, and more. Author events are happening at bookstores all over town and beyond, and the variety is pretty big. This is not a single venue festival. It's happening at all your favorite bookstores and soon-to-be bookstores. It's a whole region lit up shelf by shelf. Right here in Vancouver, White Oak Books is partnering with KMHD and OPB and the Portland Book Week, which is what I'm talking about, to do a Books Without Boundaries. It's a silent reading party with OPB and KMHD. Celebrate Portland Book Week in community with other readers, featuring a live DJ set from KMHD's Blair Stapp. That's Wednesday, June 10th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at White Oak Books at 1700 Main Street. Again, a silent reading party with a DJ at White Oak Books, 1700 Main Street, Vancouver. Entry is free. Space is limited. Bring your own cozy comforts. White Oak Books is a woman-owned store in Vancouver. All new books for everybody from everywhere. So that's a big event in Vancouver. Also, bookstores you can find in Camas that are participating, Autumn Leaf Books and Bookish. Other bookstores in Vancouver, Birdhouse Books in downtown, Friends of Vancouver Community Library, I already mentioned that, Vintage Books, and White Oak Books, and Literary Leftovers and Battleground. So those are your all Southwest Washington participants. And then, of course, there are all the Portland bookstores. So Portland Book Week culminates on the weekend of June 13th and 14th with the Rose City Book and Paper Fair. If you haven't been to that, you are missing out, just as a browser. Held at the Doubletree by Hilton and Northeast Multnomah, the fair runs Saturday and Sunday, 10 in the morning to 5 in the afternoon, with more than 60 dealers. And they bring used books, rare books, vintage maps, prints, postcards, ephemera, and conversation. So if you're interested in history, it's also a really fun event to go to. Free to attend. It's one block from the Lloyd Center Mac Stop on the blue, green, and red lines. Again, that's the Rose City Book and Paper Fair, the culminating event held at the Doubletree. And that's 10 days. Almost 80 bookstores. One giant festival happening across Portland and Southwest Washington. Portland Book Week runs from now through June 14th. The full list of participating stores and events is at portlandbookweek.com.
When you find
And in honor of Portland Book Week, Portland and Beyond Book Week, let's hear from Portland's own Ursula K. Le Guin. I'm Stina Trecha, and I was able to meet her when I was 16, which is quite a while ago, and I cried, and I told her that Left Hand of Darkness made me cry. She signed a book that I still have. And this speech is from 2014, when she accepted the National Book Foundation's Medal for Distinguished Contribution to American Letters. I think it's become her most famous speech. And thank you so much, Ursula K. Le Guin, for everything that you have done for humanity. And so proud to say that you're from our area here in Portland. Here's Ursula K. Le Guin.
I think hard times are coming when we will be wanting the voices of writers who can see alternatives to how we live now and can see through our fear-stricken society and its obsessive technologies to other ways of being, and even imagine some real grounds for hope. We will need writers who can remember freedom, poets, visionaries, the realists of a larger reality. Right now, I think we need writers who know the difference between production of a market commodity and the practice of an art. Developing written material to suit sales strategies in order to maximize corporate profit and advertising revenue is not quite the same thing as responsible book publishing or authorship. Thank you, brave applauders. Yet, I see sales departments given control over editorial. I see my own publishers in a silly panic of ignorance and greed, charging public libraries for an ebook 6 or 7 times more than they charge customers. We just saw a profiteer try to punish a publisher for disobedience, and writers threatened by corporate fatwa. And I see a lot of us, the producers, who write the books and make the books, accepting this, letting commodity profiteers sell us like deodorant and tell us what to publish and what to write. Well, I love you too, darling. Books, you know, they're not just commodities. The profit motive is often in conflict with the aims of art. We live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable. So did the divine right of kings. Any human power can be resisted and changed by human beings. Resistance and change often begin in art, and very often in our art, the art of words. I have had a long career and a good one in good company. Now here, at the end of it, I really don't want to watch American literature get sold down the river. We who live by writing and publishing want and should demand our fair share of the proceeds. But the name of our beautiful reward is not profit. Its name is freedom. Thank you.
would make you well. Write about love, it could be in any tense, but it must make sense. I know a trick, forget that you are sick. Seconds move on.
If you watch the clock
and the sky grows dark,
if you're looking up,
but the girls stretch from thrill to thrill on the tightrope walk.
On the tightrope walk.
Let's continue this theme around Portland Book Week, which is also happening here in Vancouver and all over Clark County. We've got some Battleground and Camas, just as a reminder. But let's keep this local author. So Octavia Butler, also a science fiction author like Ursula K. Le Guin, she actually ended up living in Seattle in a neighborhood, Lake Forest Park, that I lived in during part of my life, and actually the street that I used to wait for a bus for school on is now named Octavia Butler Way. So I was pretty excited to see recently. So I'm just sharing all my personal connections here, and that's what you can too if you want to volunteer and be part of KXRW. You can make radio and put together shows that are around your interests, your music, your books. Head to kxrw.fm to find out more. But this is a half an hour about Portland Book Week and celebrating books. And as an avid book lover, I decided to put together not only some information about Portland Book Week, but also get Ursula K. Le Guin's voice on here, get Elvis Costello on here, get some Belle and Sebastian on here. And now we're going to hear some of the interview that Octavia Butler did on Democracy Now! In 2014 with Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez right after Katrina, not right after, but in conversation around Hurricane Katrina. So this is from Democracy Now! Thanks for joining me here on KXRW. I'm Stina Trecha.
They were what I call cautionary tales. If we keep misbehaving ourselves, ignoring what we've been ignoring, doing what we've been doing to the environment, for instance, here's what we're liable to wind up with.
In her books, Octavia Butler also wrote about slavery, about fascism, about religious fundamentalism, and so much more. Her work inspired a new generation of Black science fiction writers. She's been called the mother of Afrofuturism. And Octavia Butler's audience has continued to grow. In September, she made it the New York Times bestseller list for the first time, 50 years after she began writing and nearly 15 years after her death. Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez and I interviewed Octavia Butler in November of 2005. It was shortly after Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans. President George W. Bush, the former governor of Texas, was in the White House overseeing the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Part of this interview aired live, but some of it has never been broadcast before.
How did you first start writing science fiction? You grew up in Pasadena. How did you first become attracted to that type of writing?
I think I loved it because, I fell into writing it because I saw a bad movie, a movie called Devil Girl from Mars, and went into competition with it. But I think I stayed with it because it was so wide open. It gave me the chance to comment on every aspect of humanity. People tend to think of science fiction as, Star Wars or Star Trek. And the truth is, there are no closed doors and there are no required formulas. You can go anywhere with it.
We're talking to Octavia Butler. Her latest book is Fledgling, wrote the Parable series as Katrina was happening, then the aftermath of Katrina. A lot of people were talking about Octavia Butler and how the Parable series made them think about that. Explain.
I wrote the two Parable books back in the 90s, and they are books about, as I said, what happens because we don't trouble to correct some of the problems that we're brewing for ourselves right now. Global warming is one of those problems. And I was aware of it back in the 80s. I was reading books about it. And a lot of people were seeing it as politics, as something very iffy, as something they could ignore because nothing was going to come of it tomorrow. That and the fact that I think I was paying a lot of attention to education because a lot of my friends were teachers, and the politics of education was getting scarier, it seemed to me. We were getting to that point where we were thinking more about the building of prisons than of schools and libraries. And I remember while I was working on the novels, my hometown, Pasadena, had a bond issue that they passed to aid libraries. And I was so happy that it passed because so often these things don't. And they had closed a lot of branch libraries and were able to reopen them. So not everybody was going in the wrong direction. But a lot of the country still was. And what I wanted to write was a novel of someone who was coming up with solutions of a sort. My main character's solution is, grows from another religion that she comes up with. Religion is everywhere. There are no human societies without it, whether they acknowledge it as religion or not. So I thought religion might be an answer as well as, in some cases, a problem. And in, for instance, Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents, it's both. So I have people who are bringing America to a kind of fascism because their religion is the only one they're willing to tolerate. On the other hand, I have people who are saying, well, here is another religion, and here are some verses that can help us think in a different way, and here is a destination that isn't something that we have to wait for after we die.
Octavia Butler, could you read a little from Parable of the Talents?
I'm going to read a verse or two, and keep in mind these were written early in the 90s, but I think they apply forever, actually. This first one, I have a character in the books who is, someone who is taking the country fascist and who manages to get elected president. And who, oddly enough, comes from Texas. And here is one of the things that my character is inspired to write about this sort of situation. She says, "Choose your leaders with wisdom and forethought. To be led by a coward is to be controlled by all that the coward fears. To be led by a fool is to be led by the opportunists who control the fool. To be led by a thief is to offer up your most precious treasures to be stolen. To be led by a liar is to ask to be lied to. To be led by a tyrant is to sell yourself and those you love into slavery. And there's one other that I thought I should read because I see it happening so much. I got the idea for it when I heard someone answer a political question with a political slogan. And he didn't seem to realize that he was quoting somebody. He seemed to have thought that he had a creative thought there. And I wrote this verse. Beware. All too often we say what we hear others say. We think what we are told that we think. We see what we are permitted to see. Worse, we see what we are told that we see. Repetition and pride are the keys to this. To see and to hear even an obvious lie again and again and again may be to say it almost by reflex, then to defend it because we have said it, and at last to embrace it because we've defended it and because we cannot admit that we've embraced and defended an obvious lie. Thus, without thought, without intent, we make mere echoes of ourselves, and we say what we hear others say. Just one more comment on the human condition, I guess.
Octavia Butler, a lot of the themes of your books are about being an outsider. Talk about that, and talk about what it means to be. I mean, here you are, a science fiction writer. It is rare the way you weave in issues of race, issues of power, religion. I mean, it's rare to be a black woman science fiction writer.
It's true. When I was getting started, there was one other man, Samuel R. Delaney, and he was one of my teachers. And we were having a panel discussion at a library one day, and somebody asked, well, how many of you are there? And we looked at each other and we said, we're two-thirds. There was one other man up in Canada who was writing who has since gone a different direction. So things are better now, but there was a time when there was almost nobody. I think part of it is just because people do what they see other people doing. I had a student come up to me at Michigan State University, and this was a young black woman many years ago, and say, you know, I always loved science fiction. I've always wanted to write it, but I didn't think we did that. And she was afraid that if she got into it, there would be closed doors. And life is short. So sometimes people don't want to take the risk of running into closed doors. My friend said to me, you're doing all this, and we thought you were so brave, and after a while we decided that you just didn't have any sense. So I have never really wanted to do anything else.
When you tour around, and obviously the people who come to the readings are the fans who regularly follow you, what is your sense of your readers in terms of what they're most attracted to when you're writing?
I've always had at least three groups, identifiable groups of readers. And I remember trying to convince my publishers of this early on and having no success until I went with a smaller publisher. But the groups, and they used to have their own independent bookstores. There are still a few independents left, but they were science fiction, black, and feminist, and they still are. And of course, now some mainstream. So I'm always glad that there are more readers that people find out about me. People keep telling me, "Oh, I would have read you before, but I've never heard of you."
What about the power of fundamentalist religion?
Oh, I was raised in a fundamentalist church. I was raised Baptist. One of my grandfathers was a Baptist preacher. And I'm actually grateful for one thing specifically, had that conscience installed early. And it's a monster of a conscience. I can't really get away with things. I'm not worried about being caught by other people. My own conscience is going to get me. It's when people begin using their religion as just a way of getting power over other people that scares me.
That was just author Octavia Butler on Democracy Now! From 2014. Before that, we had Ursula K. Le Guin. And before that, information about Portland Book Week, which runs June 5th through 14th. For more information, head online and check out Portland Book Week.